solo adventure awaits you.
This is Solo Travel Talk. Your solo travel advisor is Astrid Clements.
This giant metal tube isn't supposed to be in the air.
And other thoughts might be the source of travel stress. Being afraid to fly is common, and Astrid knows something about the topic. On this episode of Solo Travel Talk, your solo travel podcast, we turn our attention to feeling good in the friendly skies. I'm producer Catherine, and I've been known to grip an armrest or two in my own time. Astrid, you yourself used to be a bit scared of flying. Tell us a little bit about your journey with flying fears.
Well, a little bit scared is not
an understatement.
Yeah, I mean, completely scared to death to fly. And I've had to work very, very hard to get through this because I love to travel. And I was determined not to let this keep me from traveling. But my journey in terms of getting over being very fearful of flying started in a strange way. As a young child, I would have reoccurring nightmares of me being in an airplane crash. And I would be the only survivor. And it was so strange because I had these dreams even before I ever had flown. So I didn't know what in the world was making me dream about being in an airplane crash. Now, I would watch my father go off and fly off to business trips when I was, you know, young in the late 50s and 60s. And this is kind of when it started. But I thought, well, maybe I'm just so scared to death that I'm going to lose my soulmate, my father. And I just could not get comfortable with the idea that that was the kind of thing that you should do. I mean, you know, everybody says, oh, you know, here's this ton of steel, this tube, how can it stay up in the air? And as a child, that's exactly how I was going. Oh, I'm so scared, you know. Well, I think that might have been the root of it. But so the nightmares were really my first source of being afraid to fly.
I cannot imagine that you had those nightmares and ever got onto a plane, ever.
Yeah.
I would have been, no.
These dreams are so weird, too. Some of them would be this big, like, snake-looking train flying machine in the air, and then it would break apart, and all the cars would fall down, or I would be coming in for some kind of bizarre landing, clipping trees and tumping over and over, and then finally stop it. And I'm sitting in the chair, and I'm the only person who made it. I mean, they were some bad dreams.
Yeah, you said it. Jeez.
So this started it. And I mean, I hate to say it, every now and then I have one of these dreams. And, you know, if I have any listeners who are psychiatrists or a clinical psychologist that would make some comments below on maybe some insight on how I could quit these dreams, it would help. But, you know, that started it. I would always feel like, you know, oh God, maybe this is how I'm going to die in an airplane crash. So that was really, you know, the first real source of my fear of flying. Then next, I'm claustrophobic. So that is a typical problem for people who are afraid of flying. They're not, you know, the flying itself is really not, and we'll go into the facts after I tell you some of these facts. I mean, you know, you can't really consider flying dangerous, even though, oh God, you know, the news makes it sound horrible. But the feeling of being in a smaller space and claustrophobia is a problem. Like, I know I get it sometimes in elevators, and I've had feelings of it in the subway before. And I've had a few instances where, I mean, I start sweating profusely. You know, a couple of times the elevator wasn't really moving, and, you know, I had to keep punching and calling somebody, and then it finally started working. I mean, I was just sweating. Then I had another bad incident in London, which, you know, this does happen. But the subway I was on stopped in the middle of the concrete tube, and the conductor didn't come on for a while. Then he said, you know, there's been a problem up ahead of us, and we'll have to sit here till they fix it. Well, it started to get so hot, and people were getting antsy. And I mean, I was going, oh my God, well, maybe I'm going to just die in the in this subway car. And I sat on the floor. This is how bad I was getting. I sat on the floor. I started praying. And it was so hot, I thought, well, if they don't start moving or get some air in here, I'm just going to take my blouse off. Because, I mean, I was going down, you know, in terms of just
heat stroke or something. Well, yeah.
I was just really scared.
Yeah.
I didn't say I was panicked. Because I'm not the kind of person that actually panics. But, I mean, I was really scared. I was like, oh, well, if I'm going to die today, then, you know, I'm ready to go to heaven. You know, but it was terrible. And then finally we started going. And unfortunately, when we got out at the station, it had been part of some kind of terrorist incident that happened further up on another line or something, and they had the emergency vehicles out. They were giving us water, and I mean, I thought, oh God, that really was kind of scary.
Yeah.
it was more scary afterwards than that. But my point is I have claustrophobia, so I don't like that, and that is definitely, you know, some of the root of why I never was at first comfortable at all with flying. Then, then it goes into also, I guess I'd have to say, I hate feeling trapped. You know, I'm the kind of person that, I'm very confident, I'm independent, and the feeling of being trapped is just the worst feeling for somebody like me. And so, you know, when I first started flying and they'd shut that door of the plane and lock it, I think, oh my God, well, I can't get out now. And I would really have a little bit of like, oh, you idiot, why are you even going on in this thing or going anywhere? You know, you don't like this. So, and then when the plane started taxiing down the runway here, again, I'd be praying again, please, you know, if something happens, let it be quick and all of that. And I know a lot of people do this. I hate to say it, but this is exactly what I do. Maybe everybody doesn't go that far, but I'm ready to completely, you know, cleanse myself of any sins or anything, because I want to go in the right place wherever this is afterwards.
So you're saying there's a reason there's a chapel in the airport. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. And then as it starts to lift off, I'm going, is this thing going to get up in the air? Yuck. And then, you know, you finally get in the air, and then, you know, I'll start hearing weird. This is really, you know, when I first started flying, because I'm not nearly like this anymore. And then I'd hear any weirdness. The wheels would go up in the bay, and I thought, oh, my God, will they ever come down? Did they really get up? And then, you know, just any kind of creaking. And then, oh, my God, with the turbulence, that was, you know, I've had to work hard to get through the turbulence kind of scenario and not be like really wanting to throw up or sweat or whatever. You know, anything like that. And then I'd have crazy thoughts like, is the pilot drunk? or is this thing, did they really maintain this plane before we left? You know, oh God, we're going to have a mid-air crash in 5 minutes. I mean, I know something is going to happen. You know, and I know this sounds so cuckoo, but I think it really stems from those horrible dreams that I was getting ready to survive. So, you know, that's kind of where my head was, I guess you would say, with the flying. And so the first time I really started flying was in the when I was in college, and I went to Europe a couple of times. And those flights were, there was nothing wrong with them, but I mean, I was a complete exhausted wreck by the time I got on the other side of the Atlantic. But I, you know, I did it anyway because I just loved traveling. I mean, ever since I was a young child, in my first trip to Miami Beach at 9 years old, oh, I wanted to see the world. So I had the opportunity, and I always would take the chance. And then when I married my husband, I flew a lot with him because he, you know, for business and also pleasure, we both like to travel, so I got to go with him. And I had some what I call scary moments flying with him. You know, we went to the Bahamas and the Caribbean a lot. And I'm telling you, we went through some storms. One time I was sitting over the wing and I saw lightning strike the wing, and I told my husband, the engine's going to be on fire. You know, it was a bad storm. And then another time, you know, we went through some really bad fog, and I mean, all of a sudden we had landed, and it was unbelievable. I couldn't believe how a plane could land and could not see at all, and all of a sudden you were on the runway. That was a very weird feeling. And, you know, just a lot of turbulent conditions, especially coming into Louisiana in the summertime. I mean, let me tell you something. You can just be prepared. It's going to be like a roller coaster coming down. And it's just like, oh, and I at that point in my flying stage, I could not stand turbulence. I mean, I would just, you know, put my head down, or, you know, put my head on him and just, you know, squeeze his arm so tight. It was pitiful. And he was never scared. I kept saying, it doesn't bother you. He says, I know, this is just, you know, normal. Well, the incident that I had with him flying, which really got me serious about it, I better get over this irrational fear of flying. I have a phobia, as they call it, because I was going to be to where, you know, it was really going to affect whether I went or not. But this incident happened going to Paris, and this was another business trip, and I was told that, you know, I was just supposed to entertain this other gentleman's wife, and this wasn't a trip about me and everything, but I was eager to go. So we were about an hour before the coast of France, and we were up 30,000 feet or 35,000 feet, and all of a sudden the plane lost its stability. It started just wobbling and everything, and I mean, unfortunately, I didn't have my seatbelt on. I got that seatbelt on, and the second I got it on, that plane started diving and going down it, I thought, as fast as it could. I said, this is it. I mean, it was horrible. And then we hit this hard bump, which was obviously air, and we bumped around pretty bad for about 10 minutes, and then it leveled out. And I thought, why didn't the pilot come on and say anything? That was terrible. I mean, did we lose engine power, or, you know, what happened? I mean, this was so weird. This was like this plane was completely going down. The nose was down, and it was going. It felt like as fast as it could, and it felt like for a minute. But my husband said, oh, that wasn't more than 10 seconds. But it was so scary, y'all. I mean, I'm telling you, that was scary. So right before we landed, I went to the restroom, and I asked the stewardess, I said, what happened? you know, when we went down like that, she said, I don't know. She said, I've been flying for 20 years and nothing like that has ever happened. And so I went back to my seat and I told my husband, I said, look, that was really bad. You know? So I don't really know what happened because the pilot
never... They never explained it?
No.
Oh, come on.
And let me tell you, you know, most of the times the pilots will say, we're getting ready to go through some turbulence, or after we go through it, they'll say, you know, that was a little bit worse than we thought, but, you know, we did everything we could to get above it or go around it or whatever. But they always come and explain. And what's so good about pilots these days, they're very calm and they're used to all kinds of, you know, potential things happening. So they make you feel better. When they don't say anything and something goes on, oh, I mean, that's like they didn't want to say the engine. Because what happened, that was clear air turbulence. And clear air turbulence can be really the most frightening turbulence because it comes out of nowhere. And I don't know if it caused the engines to stall out and he had to go down as fast as he could and keep trying to restart them and they started. I don't know what happened, but let me tell you, that's what it felt like.
Well, and for the flight attendant to say she had never experienced like that.
In the 20 years that she had flown. So let me tell you, that got me serious about, you know, I have to get over this because, you know, I don't know if I ever really want to do this again. But a little bit more about the history of me getting through it, because it kind of shares with you some of, a regular person's plight to get through this. But my husband, he was building his business and everything, and he got into private aircraft, and I thought, oh God, I've got to fly on private planes now. This is really bad. And he had a very nice business liner Cessna plane, and then he upgraded to King Air, and then he leased with, I think, five other gentlemen a Learjet. And I must say, I did like the Learjet. The others were okay. But the Learjet, for some reason, that's how I got over my fear of turbulence, because we went through so many.
Tiny little.
Yeah, lots of turbulence, and I got to talk to the pilot and everything. So I got over the turbulence part, and I really, it didn't bother me like it had bothered me before. So that ironically got me through that. So I can say I've probably been flying now for about 50 years, and I don't love it still, okay? But I'm not afraid to fly, you know? And a lot of the reason why I'm not afraid to fly is I have focused a lot on getting over this, reading a lot of articles, you know, talking to, you know, pilots and stewardesses and other people who've flown and just all kinds of things. And I'll get into some of the things that I've done a little later in the show, how I've tackled this. But I decided I'm going to tackle this head on because I don't want to be just complete wreck every time I'm getting in an airplane thinking, well, is this the one I'm going to go down and I'm the only survivor? It's horrible. Those dreams were really powerful.
I can tell.
You can tell. So, some flying facts. This is what I want to share with you, first of all. Just some basic statistics. Now, I know, you know, for people who are really afraid, they're going to go and say,
this isn't going to do anything.
But still, they're important to know because they're facts. And you should get real comfort in that. First of all, you have 1 in 11 million chances that you'll die in an aircraft accident. Now, that's pretty, you know, good odds there. You have 1 in 5,000 chances you'll die in an automobile accident. Flying is the second safest mode of transportation. Catherine, do you know what's the safest?
I thought I was going to guess airline is the safest, but if it's not, cruise ship?
Escalator. Okay, it's all right.
Yeah. I can see why I got that one wrong.
Yeah. Okay, more statistics. Most aircraft accidents are not fatal. You have 95% chance of survival in an airplane accident. So those are really good odds in terms of accidents. And then one of the big fears everybody has now, 1 out of 16,500,000 plus departures will have a terrorist incident. So, you know, the airline industry and the governmental regulators and the all of the different intelligence agencies, they're putting a lot of focus on trying to prevent anything from happening. I know I just came back from Russia, and the security and it was just unbelievable. In St. Petersburg, it wasn't actually that bad. When we landed in Paris, as soon as we got off the plane, off of the jetway, they had policemen there checking our passports, looking in our bags. And then we walked down there. The dogs were in the airport. And we weren't in the airport, in the Paris airport, very long before we flew back to the United States. But I'm telling you, and then in New York, it was bad. Right now, they're putting a lot of emphasis on it. But the stats show that, 1 in 16 million plus, you'll have a terrorist incident. So let's hope that they really get that under control. But bottom line, the odds are on your side that everything's going to really be okay. Next, planes are tested extensively before they're sold to the commercial airlines. They go through lots of testing. I mean, in terms of, wing flexibility. A lot of people are afraid, oh, God, if we go through turbulence, the wings are going to fall off or something like that. Or have they put all the bolts? Sometimes I'd say, oh, look, there's a bolt missing. But they are engineered to bend and bounce, and they are made to go through whatever the plane, whatever you have to do. So don't worry about the wings falling off. I mean, everything that I've read, they are engineered to be able to handle it. They also test them for ingestion into the engine. There, sometimes bird ingestion can be a big problem, as we all know with the Miracle on the Hudson,
right?
Yeah, that supposedly happened because of bird ingestion. But they test them extensively for that, and also a lot of water during real heavy rainstorms, especially when they're landing. Velocity minimum. They test each aircraft on exactly what is the minimum speed for this big tin tube to get up, as well as braking. They'll load it up to the max and have worn brake pads, and they'll see how it performs when it breaks. So you should really feel like that these new commercial aircrafts are engineered very well, and they are safe flying machines. They're not like, they're much better, really, than they were even 20 years ago, I can tell you. But so they're safe. Then the commercial planes, now this is one that, I didn't really know if I totally believe this, but this is a fact, that commercial planes can safely fly with just one engine, and they can land also with no engine power. Oh, God, for somebody who's scared.
Let's not test it, but we can believe it.
So, but they're that well engineered today. And they can, if all the engines go out, they can glide a long way. And the stat on that is basically 1 in 1 billion flights, both engines go out. So that should make you feel much better. But I know when I first started flying, and even, until, I always check the planes out that I'm going to fly on before I book the ticket, because I like to fly in those new planes. They're so fine. But I would try to book the planes that had 3 or 4 engines. I didn't trust the ones that had 2. That's when you're a really freaky flyer. You're trying to, you know, cover all your bases, you know, belt and suspenders. But so,
did you just say belt and suspenders?
Yeah, that's the way I was thinking. Like, I was ready. I read one article one time. One man was so scared that he actually flew with a parachute.
Oh.
And then, yeah, he had it ready in case he needed to use it.
That's funny.
Now that's really scary.
We'll come out with the Astrid Travel branded parachutes, maybe.
That's so funny. I mean, as if that would work. But, you know, he was really, I wasn't that bad. But engine failure doesn't mean you're going to inevitably go down and crash. So just know that, okay? And that should give you quite a lot of comfort, to tell you the truth. Next one that I never really totally believed either was turbulence isn't dangerous. Oh, turbulence, you know, people who, you know, are very comfortable with flying pilots, and then everybody in the industry, they just say, look, it's just a nuisance. You know, you're really safe. You know, turbulence is no big deal. First of all, the planes can't be flipped or thrown into a tailspin or flung out of the sky because of turbulence. Mm. And turbulence is really just different levels of high and low air pressure. And when they come together, you bump. It's just, you know, they all, everything you read, it's just like a bump in the road. Well, a bump in the road feeling at 30,000 feet, you're going, oh, God, you know. But bumps really aren't dangerous because, as I said, the planes are so well engineered. They, like, extreme turbulence, they rate turbulence from light turbulence to moderate to extreme. And extreme turbulence is very rare, and that's somewhere around 4 G's of force. Now, the planes are engineered to withstand 6 to 7 G's of turbulent force. So, the planes are really engineered to go through it. So, I mean, if you are just banging up and down and sideways, these planes are made to be able to stand that. So, just know that they're engineered, and turbulence is just a normal part of flying. That's another thing you have to get used to. You know, every time I would go on a flight and I wouldn't go into any turbulence, I said, oh, well, now that was A-okay. That was normal. And then when I, you know, would go through ones with turbulence, I would, oh, my God, that's one of those really, you know, the odds. Yeah, but it's normal. So, and with the weather changing now and the weather patterns changing, some of the turbulence can get pretty bad now. I think it's worse now than it was when I first started flying. But with that said, the pilots are great now. They really go around it. And they really do everything they can not to fly through it, because they know people don't like it. And it's important to just the reputation of the airlines, et cetera, to keep the flying experience good. So that's also comforting. Likewise, if you fly early morning or right before sunset, the air is supposedly less unstable, so it's not as turbulent. So remember that if you're booking flights and you want to try to avoid turbulence, this is supposedly factually substantiated that the flights are usually less turbulent if you take off at these times. Then also, we have, you know, if you're flying during hurricane season or monsoon season, or when the temperatures are extremely high, that's when the turbulence will get real bad, especially like clear air turbulence when the heat is rising violently up, etc. And also certain routes are more turbulent than others. Brown said, go over the equator at different times of the year can get very turbulent. So just know that, you know, be prepared that this could happen. And of course, this is, you know, don't sit in the back of the plane. The back of the plane is definitely the worst place on the plane to sit in terms of turbulence. So just tell yourself till you believe it, this turbulence is not life-threatening. It's just uncomfortable. You know, a plane does not, like I said, fly out of the air or crash because of turbulence. It's something
else. It just feels like it.
Oh, yeah. It's horrible. Okay, some more facts. Commercial aircraft are required by law to be well-maintained. This was another fear that I had. Well, you know, what happens if the maintenance people are just mad? They're mad at the company. They're mad at something, and they just forget to put that extra bolt in or whatever, you know. But they are very well-maintained. You know, for every 1 hour flying, planes are required to have 12 hours of maintenance. Now, that's a lot of maintenance for one. This is for commercial aircraft. That's a lot of maintenance. Then every 30 days, they have a full and extensive inspection, and whatever maintenance needs to be done, they do it then. So that in itself, they are really serious about maintenance. Then every 4 years, they have a 4 to 5 week major overhaul where the commercial aircraft will go in, and I mean, they really just get it to pristine shape. Because, of course, any kind of crash or incident that is maintenance-related is awful for airlines' reputation. So this is very, very important in the government. The governments around the world pretty much so are very, very focused on maintaining. Because that's usually when there's something that happens with an aircraft, some kind of problem, it could be maintenance oriented. So also the planes are inspected on the ground after every flight, most of them. I mean, some of these, I'm sure these low cost airlines who just run into an airport, get people on, you're running in, running off the plane, but they do, you know, there is a certain bottom line maintenance that all commercial aircraft have to have. So feel good about that, you know, that it's not like shipshod. So that's really good. Then the pilots themselves are highly trained and qualified before they're allowed to fly commercial airlines. They have to have at least 1,500 hours, whether it's military flying or civilian flying. They are put through a battery of psychological testing, physical fitness and testing, health history. They go through, I think it's 3 months of systems training, FAA compliance training and procedures. They have to take tests and pass them, simulator training, and they're put under all kinds of different bad scenarios and to see how they handle it. They are required continuing education all the time. So, you know, they really are trained. So you can feel that a pilot has the experience as well as they're well trained by the airline that they're flying in. So know that. Then also, in order, when somebody is hired by an airline as a pilot, they become a first officer first, and they're on probation. And the captain, you know, they have a captain, and it monitors everything that the first officer is doing, writes monthly reports, and it's only upon his good recommendation that the pilot will get off of probation. So, you know, bottom line, trust your pilot, because they are well-trained and they are vetted, and so you don't have to worry that, you know, you've got some kind of person that, you know, the airlines don't want to pay the pilots enough, so they're just picking up anybody who's flown a little bit. You know, my mind can get way off when I'm scared. So then the air traffic controllers, they're also highly trained.
I didn't even think of them.
They're highly trained. They have 3 to 4 years of training and internship before they really are an air traffic controller. That's fabulous. And they're only allowed 8-hour shifts. And on these shifts, they can only monitor the planes for 5 to 6 hours, and they have required breaks. Also, every plane has what's called a 10-mile air highway, and these planes have to fly in the middle of the air of the airway. Even when you see a plane close to you, they have their own air highway. They're not as close to you as you think. Plus, you know, air traffic control knows where all the planes are at any time. Also, just a little extra safety for anything that would happen in midair. A lot of planes have now what's called the traffic collision avoidance systems, and this will alert them that there's a plane kind of close and maybe you need to adjust your path or whatever. So bottom line is mid-air collisions are virtually impossible. So, and knowing all this is really did help me, because I would fancy, well, what happens if, you know, some little plane is just, you know, hauling drugs or whatever, they're going to crash into us. You know, the air traffic control systems and the radars and whatever they have in place now, it's really pretty good that won't happen. So then, plane doors are impossible to open during flight. Now, you know, when you're scared to fly, you'll think about, well, what happens if that person sitting by the door just freaks out and wants to open the door? I mean, and there are people who will have a terrific panic attacks and things like that.
I've seen movies too.
but relax. Once a plane is pressurized, it, like say if it's at 30,000 feet, there is 20,000 pounds of pressure against the door. So it's impossible to open the doors.
Despite what we've seen.
Yes. Well, that's why I'm sharing.
Yeah, I like it.
I'm sharing these facts. Now, you know, with all that said, and these facts should, you know, at least give you just a little bit of information to help you realize that, you know, your fear of flying is really irrational, that this is a very safe mode of transportation. So you have to really believe it. And if you can't quite get there yet, you have to work at it. So that leads me to the next part of this episode, is my tips to help the solo traveler overcome aviophobia, or basically the fear of flying, because I had to use all of these to get there. So
that's what listeners are here for, is your tips, because you got good ones.
Yeah, well, this is from experience, because let me tell you, I was just as afraid as anybody, really, to tell you the truth.
Oh, you've proven that. Yeah.
So it what's so funny too is my sister was never afraid.
Yeah.
You know, and she and I grew up with the same father in the same family, and she's never afraid. And my husband, oh my God, I mean,
were trying to get him to admit fear, but he's had none.
And my kids aren't even afraid. I'm the only cuckoo one, I guess. But okay. But the first tip is just accept your flying fear. And just say, yes, I am scared to fly. But no, it's irrational. Okay? So just say, okay, here it goes again. I'm afraid. I'm getting on this plane. Well, what you do is visualize. Now, I know this will sound kind of trite, but visualization can really help a lot of people get through an irrational fear, okay? Visualize yourself getting in the plane, sitting down, fastening your seatbelt, reading a magazine during flight, even a little bit of turbulence, like, oh, you're sitting there, I got this, blah, blah, blah. You know what I'm saying? But and then, you know, coming in for a landing, getting your suitcase and being happy and heading to the hotel. I mean, I know that sounds kind of trite, but do it. It does kind of, in some kind of way, help you get through what you're getting ready to do. And it's basically just tell yourself, you got this. Now, come on. I'm going to fake it till I make it. But you got to start somewhere. I mean, because if you don't, those irrational fears, I mean, oh, God. You know, you'll be sweating before you know it. Next, practice deep breathing skills. The minute you feel like you're getting a little too anxious, just diaphragmatic breathing. And do that, because I can tell you, I've done it whenever the turbulence gets too bad. I still do it. I just start real slow breathing in deep, you know, deep at the bottom of your lungs and releasing it through your mouth. It helps you. It really does relax your nervous system. Practice that before home. Just say, if it gets bad, I'm just going to breathe. Okay? The next is stay hydrated. Dehydration when you fly will get you more on edge. So drink water, you know, stay hydrated before you fly and while you're flying. And don't drink a lot of caffeinated drinks, coffee or energy drinks or any kind of stimulant drinks, because you'll be more on edge. And when you're more on edge, then the anxiety is close to the surface. Seat selection. That's very important, because, like I told you, if you sit in the back of the plane, that's the bumpiest, worst ride in the whole plane. What I do is when I buy the ticket, whenever possible, I choose a seat then. I like to sit in the very first row or the second row. That's my favorite, and by the window. Some people don't like the window because they feel a little bit more, I don't want to say trapped, but pinned. And so they like the aisle. But I like that part of the plane. But bottom line, by the exits. I'm the closer to the exit to where if something happened, am I going to have to jump over the seat or can I get out? I mean, belt and suspenders. I mean, when I get in a plane every time now, still, I'm thinking, that, well, if anything happened, what would I do? So. Also, let's see if there's anything else about that. Oh, yeah. And, you know, if you're flying a long time, I mean, especially the older I've gotten, I mean, I really don't like to fly just in the back of the plane, you know, on the regular fare. I try to fly business class or minimum premium economy if it's a real nice type of premium economy experience, because you have more room. And if you're all crammed in with a lot of people and their babies back there and everything, I mean, everybody's more tense. And when the tension's up, I mean, you just, as a human being, you can feel it. So those are my tips for seat selection. The next one is make friends with the people next to you. If you're really scared of flying, and you're comfortable enough to talk to a stranger, you might want to say, look, you know, I really don't like to fly. And if I act weird, just know that, you know, I have a little bit of a fear of it. So just let them know. And they'll be real, you know, I know I had one or maybe two times that I was flying or I was traveling solo. I mean, I went through some just unbelievable turbulence. And I told the gentleman next to me, I said, look, turbulence really makes me really weird. I said, would you mind if I hold your arm? So I did. He said, not a bit. And just holding his arm, I thought, well, if this is it, at least I'm holding on to this gentleman. But he was very nice. So, just know 35%, the statistics, I forgot to tell you this, the statistics are something like 35% of all people who fly are this scared. So, make friends with the person, or just kind of share with them and let them know, because when your eyes start opening, you're just tense up with everything. And I mean, now I'm so much more comfortable. If somebody's sitting next to me and they're like, I said, I'll tell them now, oh, that wasn't too bad. Don't worry about this or whatever. So, 6, keep distracted. Now, if your mind wanders and thinking like, oh, God, do they have enough gas in this place? I mean, I can think of anything bad.
You are thinking of everything.
I want to go talk to the pilot, make sure he's done everything he's supposed to. But keep distracted. You know, watch the movies. Listen to the music, especially if you're going on a long flight overseas. I mean, they've got great movies now, games you can play, wonderful music, the seats massage you.
Oh, wow. All
kinds of stuff. They try to keep you real relaxed. So, you know, just keep distracted. I know that, like, I love to play bridge, so I have a little app, and I play bridge domestically because you don't really get the good music or anything. There's some movies on some of them on the longer flights, but I like that. But I can tell you, when I still fly over any kind of water, any long flights, I will watch that plane map. I don't care if I'm in the middle of the Atlantic. I want to know, okay, well, it's only 3 more hours. Okay, it's only 2. But keep distracted, because if you're distracted, then it just goes by much quicker. Okay, when possible, book flights on the newer planes. And let me tell you, these new Dreamliners and these new big Airbuses, those are fantastic machines. They are so well engineered. They take off. You don't even know you've taken off. And they can land those big things, and it feels like a feather. I mean, there's not even a bump. It's just it amazes me all the time. Plus, they have great stabilizers. When you go through the turbulence, it's not all this. I mean, it's you're shaking, but it's just much more stable. And I tell you, for people who don't like all that rocking and rolling, it's much better. Plus, the new planes don't have all those noises. I can tell you, the older planes, you can tell when they're older because they make a lot of noise. And the turbulence is more, you know, rough. And those landings, some of them you feel, well, God, did we almost crash? You know, because they've done it, so it's just bam.
Yeah.
And then they'll come in so fast because there's a little bit of wind. Then they'll just drop that thing. I've flown so much. I've been through it all, you know, and nothing has stopped me. So that should give you hope for anybody who has real, you know, fears of it.
If Astrid can do it, so can you.
Yes, I tell you. Okay, turbulence. This was a really big one for me to get over because this seems so unnatural. There's something bad happening when you go through turbulence. But basically, here again, relax and just breathe. When you go through this, just relax. Sway with the motion. Don't fight it. Just try to go with it. Like, okay, yeah, this is woo. But don't tense up. And of course, you really should always keep your seatbelt on, because supposedly like 90% of airplane injuries happen because the seatbelt wasn't fastened. Mm. So really, you know, I know a lot of people don't like, but just keep it loose. Even when I'm sleeping on the planes, I always have that seatbelt on. Here again, remind yourself, turbulence is a normal part of flying. And, you know, the plane's not going to fall apart. It's not going to fall out of the sky. And you are safe. It's just a roller coaster ride. Number 9. Glass or 2 of wine. Or might even want to contact your doctor and say, look, I'm really just so scared. Do you have any kind of light medication or whatever? And people will take a half a Valium or whatever. I don't do any of that because I want to be prepared if anything happens. But I will drink a glass or 2 of wine. That I don't have a problem with that. But don't overdo that, because here again, that's not too smart either.
I was wondering if wine or spirits were going to hit your list at all of tips.
Yeah, they say you shouldn't really drink hard liquor or alcohol. I mean, I don't know why. I think it's a dehydration.
That's what I was wondering, the dehydration.
It's worse. But then if none of this will help, maybe you need therapy. Because there are a lot of good therapy things that you can do. This, you know, the cognitive behavioral therapy. There are a lot of, you know, different techniques that will help you figure out what's at the root of it. Because like I said, these fears are really other fears within yourself, whether it's control issues or claustrophobia, fear of being trapped, fear of having a panic attack, or just fear of dying or being in mortal danger. And I must say, I have all of these but the panic attack. I don't seem to ever panic, but I mean, all those other ones I had. Now, I never sought therapy, so I've gotten this far without it. But if you really can't deal with it, don't be embarrassed. Go ahead and get some help with it. Because I know that people do this and it does help them a lot. Then, number 11, listen to that safety demonstration that, you know, you've heard over and over again. Just force yourself to pay attention. Know where the exits are. Just think about pulling that, you know, air pressure or that mask over you. Where's the life jacket? You know, just the basic things. Just, I always look at the little a card that describes the plane and all of that, and just pay attention, because that one time you don't, maybe something will slip your mind, and that was so simple that you should have remembered. You know, it's pretty logical now, and you've heard it over and over, but I still force myself to pay attention. Okay, then the last set basically just focuses again on get yourself informed and educate yourself really on all aspects that can make you a happy flyer, because it can happen. I mean, there's no reason for you to have these irrational fears or lack of understanding, because in this case, knowledge really is power. And that's what really helped me the most. I mean, you know, I've read articles about flying and overcoming turbulence and facing your fears and best times to fly. I mean, I've done a lot of reading, and I, you know, listen to the news, every airplane crash and all the elements of it, and I watch planes take off and land, and I mean, I really have tried to just really understand the whole experience. And that's the first step, and that really does help. Then something else that I am really big on are YouTube videos. And I can tell you, I have watched a lot of those, and they have helped a lot. They have got videos on hair-raising turbulence and all kinds of, you know, bad landings and fly arounds. But let me tell you, if you watch these things and you know how it's going to be before it happens, when it happens, you're not as scared. Hmm. It's when it's happening and you don't know what is happening. But, I mean, I've watched enough to where I feel so much more comfortable when anything starts, you know, not a totally smooth ride. As well as before I even book a ticket, I will, you know, Google, say Air France, Airbus, blah, 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 business class. I even know what the plane looks like inside. There are a lot of people that shoot YouTube videos personally that, you know, load them onto the internet. So watch those YouTube videos if, you know, they even have videos on how to overcome fear of flying. They have so many videos dealing with flying now, good and bad. And if you have this aviophobia and you are afraid to fly, watch these videos. I guarantee you it will help you. It will give you more knowledge and more comfort.
Do you think watching the videos desensitizes you a little bit to the, like, the fear of the turbulence, like watching it? It's like almost like a mini exposure therapy kind of thing.
Yes. Yes, I really do. And for somebody like me, it's wonderful. You know, because if I know something before and I'm not caught off guard or I don't understand it, if I kind of know it, then I'm cool. I mean, I'm pretty cool. Okay. Then the next thing is take some courses. There are a lot of major airlines now that have Flying Without Fear workshops.
Really?
Yeah, and they're daily. Now, I've never done this, but they are out there. I know Virgin Air does.
Atlantic?
Atlantic, Air France. I don't know all the others, but they offer them, and they're usually day long, and they go into how the plane works, how it actually flies, you know, everything about flying in the aircraft. They'll have pilots there where you can answer or ask questions, and they'll answer them. They even have a little mini therapy sessions, and you get to do a short flight. So you get the whole flying experience, and you get an educated introduction and a full, course kind of on, you know, being a passenger in a flight and what it means to fly, and don't, you know, they want you to overcome your fear. And so I think that's a great idea. If they're available in your cities and you're still really fear of flying, take one Saturday and go do a workshop. I'm sure it will help you. Then they also now have online courses that help you overcome your fear of flying. Now, there's one that's very highly recommended, and it's called the SOAR program, S-O-A-R, SOAR.
I got it.
Okay. But it is. It was put together by a pilot and a licensed therapist by the name of Tom Bunn. I mean, it's got very good reviews. And it's a four-section series. You can either buy each section individually, and I think they're about $125, or the whole four series for around $480. But it goes into the psychology of flight anxiety, strategies to deal with anxiety, panic attacks, and claustrophobia, how flying works, flight safety, pilot training, sights and sounds that you hear during flight, what to look for, you know, and what does all this mean, and then even while you're at the airport, what's going on with the planes in terms of maintenance, the actual takeoff, the landing, and he's available for counseling if you want individual counseling. So this he's very well known for this fear of flying program and all the efforts that he's done. I think he's got like videos, and you know, he does workshops and written books. He's one of the best. Then another kind of drastic thing that you could do to educate yourself is just take flying lessons. Yeah, I have actually thought about that, but I hadn't got to that stage yet. And I know my husband would just laugh and drop dead if I told him I wanted to do that, because he knows how scared I was at first. But I'm that far to where I think, you know, I might tackle that next. But there was one guy who was actually a passenger on the flight that went down on the Hudson that he was so scared after that happened, he did take flying lessons, and it got him over it.
Wow.
Yeah. So I know that's a far-out suggestion, a little expensive. But you know.
Who knows? It might open a new door for somebody.
Yeah, you might be a pilot one day. Wow. I'm teasing. Okay. Then there, of course, have apps now, fear flying apps, and then the books, the e-books. I mean, if you really want to keep reading about it and getting more comfortable, you know, they got the apps even. I know they have flight tracking apps. Sometimes when I don't have anything to do, I will track certain flights. And this is how bad off I am when it comes to all this, but you know, I'm much better now. But I will watch, and I'll see this flight was had to turn back, and I'll try to figure out why they had to turn back. But they have all kinds of apps. That's what I'm saying, that'll help you. And the last, also, they have fear of flying forums now on the internet, where you can get on the internet and talk about what happened to you and what you did or what other people did. And I mean, it's just a chat room with people who are discussing this topic, which I think is wonderful. I really do, especially for people who don't fly a lot. They got to get the courage up to go again. I think it's great. So I hope the tips that I've shared with you have helped you overcome the irrational part of your flying fears. In a minimum, really, like I said, just help you fake it till you make it, because I can tell you, I still don't really enjoy flying, but I'm not afraid to fly. And let me tell you, that for somebody like me is very liberating. And so that said, don't let your fear of flying stop you from your solo travel adventures.
You know what doesn't have to cause a freak out? Packing. If you get a copy of Astrid's packing list, you can get your own copy of Astrid's complimentary packing list. Just go to astridtravel.com, download the packing list. It's right there on the front page. We also have a link to it in the show notes for this show if you would like to get it. You can subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and really find it any of the finer places that podcasts can be found. We're putting out a special call these days. If you like what you're hearing, we would love for you to give us a rating on any of those platforms, Apple Podcasts and Stitcher or SoundCloud. We love to hear your feedback about this show. Thank you so much for listening. Don't be afraid to fly. We look forward to seeing you next week on Solo Travel Talk.
Thank you for listening to Solo Travel Talk. Follow Astrid on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. To learn more about Astrid or her solo travel advisors, visit her website, astridtravel.com.